In this episode of Movie Rollers, we're going to review the movie Room 237. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Very excited to talk about this film.
Yeah, so this episode, I'm not quite sure when we'll put it out, just so that you know. This is one that we recorded a little bit earlier, but because of studio embargoes and whatnot, we're not able to put it out as soon as we've seen the movie. But we all saw the movie yesterday, which was St. Paddy's
Day.
And we saw it today together, which was cool. So, yeah, we're not going to talk about current affairs because this is a time-shifted episode.
Maybe we could predict what's going to be happening.
Maybe not.
Okay.
The Pope resigns again.
Yes.
No!
Cyprus sinks.
Yeah, did you hear about that? If you have money in the bank in Cyprus over the weekend, 7% of it would have been gone overnight. I would be so upset by that.
Sounds like a Kubrick film.
It does sound like a Kubrick film. Rashmi's desperately trying to segue us into the review. So let me just introduce the movie. Room 237 is really an examination of Stanley Kubrick's infamous movie, The Shining. Directed by Rodney Asher, in Room 237, we hear from people who have developed far-reaching theories and believe that they have decoded lots of hidden symbols and messages which were buried in the late director's film. Sometimes outrageous, sometimes engaging, the words of interviewees are given full force by Asher's compelling vision, so says the tagline. And this movie opened at 2012 Sundance, Cannes and Toronto film festivals. It's going to open wide in March 2013. I'm not sure how wide that will be, but it's certainly going to have a bigger release than it has up till now in March. So, guys, what do you think of Room 237?
Okay, so I'll start. I wrote down OMG. It's unbelievable to me what people spend their time doing. This is one of the most fascinating documentaries, simply for the fact that I can't believe how much people are actually obsessed with the film The Shining. I think this is a case of some people with way too much time on their hands.
You almost stole the words from my mouth, Rashmi. I mean, I think anybody who's going to watch this movie, they will have to fight off this easy desire to dismiss the movie as, you know, giving voice to people who have too much time on their hands, who just repeatedly watch a movie and see connections when, you know, there probably aren't any. But I think it's more than that, in that I'm fascinated by people who are obsessed, and these people are clearly obsessed. I mean, the kinds of things that they discuss in the movie, you know, it kind of bogs the imagination. So I was very, very fascinated while I was watching the whole movie. And this is, to the best of my knowledge, I've never seen a documentary which, in this level of detail, is about another movie. You know, I mean, usually a DVD might have, you know, a making of, or somebody else talking about the movie, or, you know, there'll be a little short at the end. I think the only reason for this movie to exist is its obsession with another movie. So I find that whole thing rather novel and unique, and I was fascinated by it. But I got to say, I mean, these people really, you know, go to the park, you know, read a book, you know, meet some friends, have a beer or something. I mean, they're so obsessed about this movie.
Yeah, you know, we can debate for hours the content of the movie. I mean, for me, the basic question was, is this particular movie any good? Is it worth your while to pick your butt up off your couch and go out to the movie theater and watch this movie? And, well, for me, it only makes sense to do so if you are a huge fan of The Shining, because I think if you are, then everyone knows that there's more to that movie than meets the eye.
Why?
You know, what do you mean, why? I mean, there's lots of little details in the movie that are so hard, head-scratchingly confusing that when you watch it for the first time, it kind of irritates you because you feel like you missed the whole point.
Yeah.
That's how I felt when I watched The Shining. I mean, you can take it at face value, a horror movie, but there's also things in that you don't get. So to see, if you're a big fan of the movie, if you've enjoyed it, to have something that explores that movie in this kind of depth, I think is a really entertaining experience. If, on the other hand, you're not a huge fan of the movie I think, like me, you will find that this documentary, and I say documentary in quotes, is a little bit annoying. I mean, it wasn't adequate entertainment enough. I mean, I found it fun in the ways that you guys did, but as a film, as a standalone product, that kind of gets me to say, go see this movie. I find it really hard to do that for anyone other than a huge fan of the Shining.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, Joe, but I like the fact... So it had a couple of things going for it for me. One was, this is the first documentary I've seen that isn't full of talking heads. And someone's gone to a lot of care and attention to actually assemble the messages of the movie using other Kubrick films wherever possible. So I think that was incredible just within itself. But then that kind of leads to my criticism, which is I would have liked to have seen who the talking heads were and the relevance of them, other than they're all obsessed with this movie. I wanted to see who's obsessed with this movie. But I think the other thing I liked about it was how much movie can mean to people, mm-hmm. and how you can have one movie that means such different things equally to different people. So I liked that it raised those sort of questions. So I found it entertaining for that simple anthropological reason.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, I almost enjoyed the analytical depth. You know, there's nothing shallow about, you know, these people have spent a lot of time and they have kind of put this in context with, you know, Kubrick's entire body of work, and they've seen connections with his other movies, and they've made, maybe it's a spoiler, I won't give it away, but, you know, certain things which have happened, which are ascribed to, you know, perhaps Kubrick having done those, you know, they're seeing kind of signs there. People are seeing, you know, a political commentary against Nazi Germany. People are seeing a political commentary against the treatment of, you know, American Indians. So I just, the depth of the analysis fascinated me. And I think anybody who loves movies should probably see this as a template of how to, like, build this idol of curiosity about a particular movie. I mean, I would love for somebody else to make a movie like this about some other movie that I truly am obsessed about. You know, like, I would love for somebody to make a movie like this about The Godfather, or somebody to make a movie like right. this about, you know, so I think it sets a good template for how to critically evaluate a movie and look for conspiracies and hidden messages and so forth. So I found it fascinating in the moment.
Whereas I ended up kind of battling the fact that these were some real crackpot theories. I mean, I found myself laughing at one comment where somebody accused Kubrick of trying to airbrush his photo into some clouds, and they did a freeze frame. I'm like, there's nothing there. It's like, I don't believe that.
I think you stopped using your inner voice and said that out loud to
I
us.
Know. There's just like, there was nothing. I couldn't see it. It's like, here's the freeze frame. And the guy's talking about how obvious it is that this was done. And maybe it's there. You know, maybe it's like one of those. Remember those old 3D stereograms where you stare at it long enough and the picture emerges? Maybe it's there if you really stare at it long enough. But I see lots of things in clouds every day on my way to work. And I don't think that Stanley Kubrick put them there.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. For me, at that point, it kind of did go down the crackpot route. And I think, instead of viewing the movie like you two did, and perhaps you liked The Shining more than I did, I viewed The Shining very late on in life. It was not a pivotal movie for me growing up. I've probably only seen it once in the last 5 years, and I took it very much at face value. I mean, it was intriguing for all the various reasons that people are intrigued by it, but I didn't find this to be the movie masterpiece that it was ascribed to be. So for me, it just felt like a bunch of, you know, obsessives really paying attention to, you know, the mundane and extracting subliminal messages where perhaps there were none. And that detracted from this particular movie's viewing experience for me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a conspiracy theorist. I love conspiracy theorists, but even this was too much for me. And I think if you believe the content in the film, you'll think that the answer to the meaning of life is actually hidden somewhere in the movie itself. And I think the other criticism I have of it is that a lot of credit is given to Kubrick, and I feel like Stephen King's role is a little bit diminished, and somehow Kubrick comes across as the way cooler one. Either way, wow. I think that, you know, he's being painted as this demigod, genius-like person.
I mean, just to respond to that, I think the whole one of the big points in the movie was that King's novel was not faithfully adapted into this movie. Kubrick took his novel and created something completely different that was Kubrick's work rather than King's. But yes, you were going to respond to that?
No. So I think they speak to it in one particular section of the movie. They mentioned that one particular scene is a direct...
Yeah, F.U.
Okay. Yeah, F.U. Yeah. On Kubrick's part to Stephen King. Going back to what you said earlier, I don't think, maybe it's how I see it, but I don't think that the director necessarily wants us to take any of this seriously. I think part of him is making the commentary and saying, look how crazy these people are. Look what their theories are. Because some of it is just really outlandish. And some of those things, you know, short of Kubrick being some kind of an IT genius, it's almost impossible for him to have done that. Like, you know, maybe I shouldn't give this away. Maybe it's a spoiler, but you know, one part of the movie, they actually play the movie frontwards and backwards and overlay the movie. And then they start seeing certain things in certain scenes. I mean, unless, you know, you on a second by second, you're working with an editor to make that work. That's impossible. And yeah, I'm willing to let you.
I agree.
Do that with any movie and you'll start seeing, you know.
Yeah. That's when it went to crazy town.
It's like Pink Floyd and The Wizard of Oz. You know, that whole conspiracy theory. I mean, you know, maybe it's true. Who knows? Nobody's saying anything. But to me, it just kind of struck me as one of those, you know, look what happens if you do this with this. And wow, all this crazy stuff emerges. And I bet if you watch the whole movie that way, there are like two or three moments when you get this kind of magical alchemy of, you know, that particular composition. But I think the rest of it must be gibberish.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to be.
Yeah. It's like the book Freakonomics, that you can make anything.
Right.
You can derive anything from anything. Yeah. All right. Anything else to say on this one?
No, I'm done. I mean, let me start with the wrap up. The one thing I did like about this movie is that it gave me a new sense of appreciation for The Shining. You know, like I said earlier, I watched the movie very much as a horror movie. I took it at face value. I think there is a lot more to the movie. And if anything, it makes me want to go back and watch the movie a second time with a kind of a more critical eye. So, you know, that was one of the key messages. But, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, this is all a bit too much, you know, Led Zeppelin, Satanic Rhymes type thing. You know, they're just trying to find things in the source material that just aren't there. And, you know, maybe they are there, maybe they're not. They didn't really convince me of any of this stuff. So, you know, if you love The Shining, if you love it, if it's, you know, in your Blu-ray collection, if it's a movie you've seen several times and can't get enough of, go see this movie. For everyone else, you know, it's just not, I don't think it's worth your while. So I'm going to give this a 6 out of 10.
Gosh, higher than I thought. Yazdi?
Yeah, I think this is a good little film school project for someone, you know, how to critically analyze a movie and let people who possibly have overanalyzed it give them a voice. So I agree. I mean, to be honest, there are some parts of what is said in the movie that I did believe. I did believe a few of the things, and I did see some of the connections. And, you know, Kubrick is known to have been very intelligent, and I can see how he threw a few things here and there to kind of, you know, make his point. So, I have to be honest and say there wasn't a minute of the movie that I was bored or annoyed or disengaged. I mean, it was pretty fascinating to me. Even when it was going to crazy town, I was rolling my eyes saying, no way. So I think it's something different that you don't normally see in cinema. So from that perspective, as kind of almost like a film school project, it's kind of fun. I would not recommend anybody spend $12 to go see it. But if it's if you're at the back of a plane, or if you are looking for a dollar rental, maybe it's worth your while. Somewhere between a 6 and a 7 for me as well. I'm going to go with 6.
Yeah, I think you both said this very eloquently during the podcast. If you're a Kubrick fan, you will love this movie. And if you are just a movie fan, I think you'll find it fascinating because it's a movie about movies. You said that, Yazdi. Yeah. And I think it shows the power of film and the lengths that people will go to if they love something or become obsessed by something. Don't watch this when you're tired. If you are neither a Kubrick fan or a movie fan, go watch Burt Wonderstone. 6 out of 10 as well. 666.
Look at that conspiracy theory. This is the work of the devil.
Oh, I have to say, one of the things that really made me laugh about this movie, and I didn't get this in the podcast, was the use of really over-dramatized spooky music. That was making me laugh.
Right. It did. It was deliberate too. I mean, it added drama to what was, I think, otherwise a fairly flat movie. It should have been a DVD
extra bit.
Extra. I mean, it should have been, you know, like a director's commentary. And obviously, the director is no longer with us. But I mean, there's nothing wrong with, you know, a group of fans. Sorry, there's nothing wrong with a group of fans, you know, doing what was it, Mystery Science Theater? They used to do that. They used to play a movie and just talk over the top of it. But you could do that kind of thing here with The Shining, right? I mean, all right.
But to Rashmi's earlier point, they have gone through a lot. Anytime somebody comes up with a cracky doodle idea, they go with it and they actually show that part of the scene of the movie and they overlay things and they have little arrows and they're going and, you know, they've gone that extra distance to demonstrate that.
I mean, it's made with so much love, and to find all of those scenes and all the other movies that, my God.
I know, but plainly some of them are continuity errors. I mean,
yeah.
You know, and they're really reading into, like, you know, the chair was there and the chair was gone. The chair was gone. That obviously means, you know, I mean, no, the chair was gone because the production assistant screwed up. You know, they had to reshoot the scene for whatever reason, or they came back the next day and somebody had buggered off with the chair and nobody noticed.
There was a dopey sticker on the door. Then the dopey sticker was gone.
Right. I mean, so. That's the kind of thing that really kind of irritated me and took me out of the movie watching experience, because I'm like, they're given serious time in this movie. Like, you know, there are some really interesting theories. I mean, the whole Apollo 11, you know, don't want to get into it too much, but the whole Apollo 11 thing, I think, was fascinating. You know, there was some really stuff, but then there was, you know, the paper tray that looks like a penis. Well, what? You know, this stuff doesn't make sense. And if you,
that was the craziest
thing. If you
put
the two of those things together, you get the crazies overwhelming the people who are making sense.
Yeah, but I think it's a narrative on how much people are obsessed with the movie and what they want to get out of it and how much people want to be convinced of these things. So that's what I think I took from it.
I missed that in the narrative, I think. Yeah. You know, I don't think there was enough time given to explore that particular obsession.
Yeah, I do think, sorry, Yazdi, I know you're dying to say something. The one thing I think was a missed opportunity was actually interviewing the cast. I'm surprised that no one actually went and interviewed the cast to kind of get a sense of what Kubrick was like
or any of the filmmakers, not just the cast. Yeah.
So that was an interesting, complete dismissal for me.
Yeah. I mean, Jack Nicholson, Shelley Duvall, they're all there. It would have been fun to ask them some of those questions. Yeah. No, I was just going to say, I bet there are a lot of people who are like, you know, the really hardcore Trekkies, for example, they have analyzed every Star Trek episode and they've analyzed every Star Trek movie, you know, scene by scene, and found, you know, there's a bolt missing and it means that and so forth. So I'm fascinated in general by people who are obsessed like that. So.
And Comic-Con's coming soon.
Yeah.
So. It made me think of, you know.
Crazies.
No, dedicated fans.
Okay.
I don't want hate mail.
All right, well, let's wrap up the episode. Let us know what you think. I mean, if you do get to see Room 237, I'd be really interested to learn what you thought of the movie. Post something on our Facebook page. We'll be happy to engage you. And as I went to prepare for this review, I found like dozens of Kubrick conspiracy websites. I mean, there's a lot more in terms of conspiracies about The Shining than was ever shown on the movie.
You know, really?
Yeah, there was one webpage where You know, they attribute Wendy walking around at one point, she's left-handed, other point she's right-handed. Whenever she's left-handed, the lighting has a blue hue. Wherever she's right-handed, the lighting has a red hue. Again, I think these are potential continuity errors rather than conspiracies, but ton of stuff out there that wasn't even covered in the movie. So, cool stuff.
All right. I mean, there are some pieces, okay, we can talk about this further. There's some pieces which clearly Kubrick is too good a director to have made those errors. Like there's the one scene they talk about where David, the little boy?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so David's playing with these train engines and this ball comes along. And then when the shot is reversed, the carpeting changes. I don't think Kubrick would have let that go. That doesn't seem like a continuity error. That seems to me like, okay, somebody is making a statement there about something. We'll never find out. But
so I see that differently. I mean, I think he thought this carpet pattern is cool. They filmed the scenes that they showed later because there was no ball rolling. But when he decided that he wanted to do the ball rolling shot, he's like, oh, there's a bit here that lines up. Let me shoot it that way because that's going to look cooler. And then you put the two things together and, you know, because we know that these things are often done with multiple takes spliced together to give us a continuous scene, right? So, again, all kinds of things that you can read into it. Maybe he was absolutely that deliberate and he wanted to get this message across. Maybe it's just the kind of thing that happens on a set when there's a million things to do and you don't quite notice and you spot something cool to do and you just throw it in there and see if it works. I mean, who knows? We will never know. I mean, that's one of the cool things about this is we will never know. And I think the cast and crew could shed some light on it, but they're going to stay tight-lipped. Let's keep the mystique. I mean, you know, why debunk the myth that's propagating the love for the movie?
Right.
Anyway, on that note, I will shut up and we will see you at our next episode. So until then, it's too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.